radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again.
This primer on democratic socialism is an expanded version of my printed pamphlet, You Don't Have to Be a Saint to Be a Socialist, copyright 2005, Edwin L. Lang, all rights reserved. No restrictions on unedited reproduction if distributed free or at a charge not exceeding the cost of reproduction. Send mail to Ed Lang, P.O. Box 186, Summerland, California, 93067. Email Ed Lang, E-D-L-A-I-N-G, at silcom, S-I-L-C-O-M, .com. This audio recording has 8 tracks. Engineers, please note that all begin in this manner. Recording number so-and-so, 3, 2, 1, mark. Each outro is until next time. Recording number 1, 3, 2, 1, mark. This is Ed Lang with You Don't Have to Be a Saint to Be a Socialist, a basic series on democratic socialism. Today, in the first of 8 recordings, we set the stage and then discuss capitalism. The other 7 will deal with what we mean by production for use, why we can afford to treat all of us fairly, and why socialism must be decentralized and democratic. Shaping work and production to meet people's real needs and development as workers and as consumers, in contrast to the failures of capitalism. Some clarifying comparisons from recent political history. Nailing down related and unrelated political isms. Getting to socialism, looking into a socialist pizza parlor. Using non-reformist reforms, building a movement in the capitalist crisis coming down on all of us, looking at who is us, and psychological and educational obstacles we don't need to have. And in this last one, you'll see where the pamphlet title comes from. What is democratic socialism? What if the world were a place where everyone had the comfortable essentials of a full life, including satisfying work, housing, food, clothing, and health care, plus the opportunity to learn and develop into all she or he could be? A world where neither the environment nor people were unfairly exploited. Democratic socialism is the exciting, life-affirming idea for a world that works for everyone. A vision whose time can come now, out of the world crisis of capitalism. This series is for people who know little about socialism, but have questions about it. Simply put, democratic socialism extends democracy from the political system to the economic system. A democratic political system is a system of government controlled by the people. Socialists want to extend that democratic control to the way goods and services are produced so that the people control the means of production. We want to change from a form where production is for profit, capitalism, to a form where production is for the comfortable and necessary use of all, in harmony with the earth, socialism. But first, in today's program, let's just talk about capitalism. And next time we'll talk about why socialism must be decentralized and democratic. And today, don't miss the quote from Einstein.
What's wrong with a system where profit is the purpose of production?
A great many things. Look around you at the nature of work, the uncertainty of day-to-day life, the scramble to get by for millions of folks. People are getting ready for change. Capitalism as a system is inherently undemocratic, both internally and in its economic power over government and communications media. Capitalism as a system has no goal whatsoever other than capital accumulation, creating great wealth and poverty simultaneously. For example, to maximize profits, unemployment is necessary in order to weaken the bargaining power of working people seeking higher pay or better benefits and working conditions, because workers know that others are competing for their jobs. Unemployment creates insecurity and poverty and pits worker against worker, often along lines of race, ethnicity, or class, where those who are lower on the economic ladder or differ in some way are made to appear your competitors or willing to work for less. Even without unemployment, the profit system results in absurd differences in wealth, where a few at the top have more than they can ever use, and enormous numbers of people are left with not enough or in poverty. George Monbiot, M-O-N-B-I-O-T, points out that the combined incomes of the least well-off one-half of the world's people, over 3 billion folks, is less than the total wealth of the world's richest 500 people. At the same time, capitalism's race for profits requires enormous expenditures for advertising paid for by the consumer, with its manipulation of our wants and fears, and the downplaying of our critical ability, which ability is crucial in a democracy, since all we need to do is respond at our primitive level to this materialistic commodification of life. Maximizing profits results in exploitation of workers, the environment, and the consumer. Capitalists can make more money for themselves if they pay their workers as little as they can get by with. The same if they use up the environment rather than respect and husband it. Consumers forget that maximizing profit is the ultimate source of injury to people caused by many things, such as unsafe drugs and insecticides knowingly promoted to millions. Remember Vioxx and DDT? And automobiles that were unsafe across the board. Remember Nader's book, Unsafe at Any Speed, that proved it?
What about cheaper goods? They say that capitalism is based on competition so that prices are controlled by the market. Capitalists tell us that producing more cheaply and defeating competitors is good for the consumer.
These are two of the utopian ideas of capitalism. In practice, many markets have no real competition, and a huge part of the world's poorer population is left out of the market altogether. The classic, repeated statement by petroleum spokespersons in the run-up of gasoline prices was, "We'd rather sell less gas, but at higher prices, than more gas at lower prices." In other words, squeeze the consumer to pay more or go without. Save the product to save and sell at higher profits later, and the public be damned. Further, producing more cheaply may give impoverished lives to workers, but often does not result in lower prices and only increases profits. The saving may not be passed on to consumers or workers. But the real goal of capitalist competition is to dominate or monopolize the market so that competition disappears and prices can then be set high or market share be increased. Then, when market control expands far enough, prices can be expected to be raised as much as the market will bear. Put another way, the final purpose of competition in capitalism is to end or reduce competition. And we must remember that defeating competitors often results in the defeated competitors losing their money and their workers losing their jobs or being squeezed to accept less pay and benefits so as to make it easier for the boss to compete. A system based on losing money or defeating the ability to earn a living is a wasteful system, harmful to people. This wasteful and destructive, necessary nature of capitalism is what Albert Einstein, who most people don't know was a socialist, called economic anarchy. He described capitalism's monopolistic nature as, quote, an oligarchy of private capital, the enormous power of which cannot be effectively checked even by a democratically organized political society, close quote. See his article, Why Socialism, in the Independent Socialist Magazine Monthly Review, May 1949. And for a brilliant summary of Socialism for the 21st Century, see Monthly Review for July-August 2005, Volume 57, Number 3, on the web at monthlyreview.org. Today, we talked about capitalism. Next time, number 2 of 8 short programs, we'll talk about what we mean by production for use, why we can afford to treat all of us fairly, and why socialism must be decentralized and democratic. For a free hard copy of my You Don't Have to Be a Saint to Be a Socialist pamphlet, upon which these audio programs were based, email me at Ed Lang, that's E-D-L-A-I-N-G, all one word, at silcom, silcom.com, or comment to that email, edlang@silcom.com. Until next time. Recording number 2. 3, 2, 1, mark. This is Ed Lang with a basic series on democratic socialism. Last time, we talked about capitalism as contrasted with socialism. Today we talk about production for human use, about why we can afford to treat all of us fairly, and why socialism must be decentralized and democratic.
So, what do you mean by a socialist form where production is for use and not for profit?
Socialists will not settle for a less than a system where fundamental human needs of all are fully met. Food, housing, health care, lifelong learning, and the opportunity to become the person you can be. People will decide democratically what things and services they really need and want, not wants and wishes created by advertising and capitalist culture. This is what we mean by production for human use. These things and services will be produced and performed in workplaces where workers are treated and paid fairly, and make the decisions to assure good working conditions, safety, health, retirement, etc. In recording 6, we'll peek into a socialist pizza parlor after the revolution. This kind of mutually supportive treatment and participation is the main idea of extending democracy to the workplace. Quoting Engels, Rosa Luxemburg said, "The choice for humanity is socialism or barbarism."
How do you know this will work to meet society's needs as democratically decided upon?
Because society as a whole will have decided to do things this way. And from workers' viewpoint, people want to have the secure, participatory kind of life where they engage in satisfying work in safe, rewarding conditions, rather than being at risk for the dangers and exploitation in a capitalist system.
Well, I also mean, how do you know this will work to actually produce the goods and services really needed and wanted?
Decentralized democratic decision-making by the people as a whole will constantly monitor and change the production process to be sure it is performing to meet requirements. Here, democracy is absolutely indispensable. When democratic control is lacking, an anti-capitalist system of any type usually reverts to capitalism and fascism, as happened in the so-called communist Soviet Union and China, who are now beset with new ruling classes and grotesque forms of capitalism. Neither revolution arose from democratic traditions, and democratic socialists certainly do not take them as models, about which more later. In China, Mao hoped the mid-course cultural revolution, with terrible excesses, would establish democratic control by the workers and peasants, but it failed. And today, China is slipping into fascism.
But can we afford to treat all of us fairly?
Absolutely. First, the enormous resources, technology, and production capabilities of today can easily generate a fair standard of living for all, especially if the enormous profits going to the very top capitalists under the present system are no longer a burden. Second, production requirements will be smaller and greener than in the wasteful, consumerist, debt-producing capitalist system we now have, where production must constantly expand in a cancerous way or die. As it expands without fair treatment of working people, there is overproduction, but not enough people with enough money to consume it, creating want and poverty. A major example of wasteful capitalism is the enormous war machine, which sucks up national wealth in welfare for arms makers. This makes crazy sense for a capitalist system that must seek to project political power militarily, that is, kill people, to dominate the rest of the world in order to control markets and resources to accumulate great wealth. Remember, capital accumulation is the only systemic purpose of capitalism, and it uses coercion and force whenever it can get away with it. Capitalist militarism makes no sense for socialists, who do not depend on expansion and accumulation of great wealth, because production is only for actual human needs. What if these enormous war machine resources and workers were put to work instead in meeting social needs building housing, and so forth. Putting aside necessary international correctives by the world's nations collectively, socialists believe in letting other nations be independent and mutually meet needs by fair trade with us, not so-called free trade, which is imperialist and exploitive capitalism. More about socialist production in Recording 7 when we look at the cooperative, scaled-back, local food-growing movements springing up today. They are already preparing for the hard times soon to come in the slide down from the peak of fossil fuel production and from global warming.
You mentioned needing decentralized democratic decision-making, but how can overall needs be met if each locality is making its own decisions independently?
A federal system with democratically chosen representatives may be the best way to ensure that we don't work at cross purposes or selfishly, but have a big picture constantly in mind. Those representatives would be charged with carrying out corrections to make the whole society benefit.
So, is this central planning?
Mixed with multiple local planning, yes. But remember, any nation has economic planning. It is only a matter of who does the planning, how well, and in whose interests. Capitalists do a lot of selfish, short-term planning to maximize their own immediate profits, often at the expense of the society as a whole, such as by plundering and despoiling resources. These real social costs are ignored and passed on to the rest of society. Long-term planning for the whole society may have to emphasize education, energy, probably alternative energy, and infrastructure, such as mass and local transit, and it'll pay off in the long term. Today we talked about production for use, why we can afford to, and why socialism must be decentralized and democratic. Next time, number 3 of 8 short programs, we'll talk about shaping work and production to meet people's real needs and development as workers, as well as consumers and as complete human beings, in contrast to the destructive failures in capitalism. The other 5 will deal with some clarifying political comparisons about getting to socialism by using non-reformist reforms, and by building a movement, about looking at our common social values, who is with us and who is not, and psychological and educational obstacles that we don't need to have. For a free hard copy of my You Don't Have to Be a Saint to Be a Socialist pamphlet, upon which these audio programs were based, email me at Ed Lang, that's EDLAING, or one word, at Silcom, SILCOM.com, or comment to that email, edlang@socom.com. Until next time. Recording number 3. 3, 2, 1, mark. This is Ed Lang with a basic series on democratic socialism. Last time and the time before, we talked about capitalism as contrasted with socialism, about socialist production for human use, about why we can afford to treat all of us fairly, and why socialism must be decentralized and democratic. Today we'll talk briefly about a socialist society shaping work and production to meet people's real needs and development as workers, as well as consumers, and as complete human beings, in contrast to the destructive failures in capitalism.
Last time, you said socialism aims to provide Satisfying work in safe, rewarding conditions. Not all work is like that.
You're right. People might decide that some dull, alienating work would be shared around or evaluated to see if that service or product were really needed or if there's another way to do it. Brute efficiency can be traded off for a method of doing things in a humane way. And if workers are hurt on the job, they would not need to fear they could not afford treatment or would be abandoned by society.
What do you mean by alienating work?
Sacrificing the workers' intelligence, creativity, and social involvement for machine-like efficiency. Alienation means cut off from. Marx pointed out that under capitalism, workers generally are cut off in four respects. 1. They are alienated from their productive activity, from meaningful participation in decisions about what they do or how to do it, how fast, and so forth. 2. They are alienated from the product of that activity, having no control over what is made or what happens to it. 3. They are alienated from other human beings, isolated from each other, with competition replacing most forms of cooperation. 4. They are alienated from their potential, individually and in a shared community. It is exactly these four failures that socialism is dedicated to erasing.
I don't understand why you say socialist production is not for profit. Don't the social benefits, etc., that you want require profits?
There has to be enough paid in from consumers, taxpayers, overall, to support the costs of production and provision of services. In that sense, of course, there is profit. But the socialist method is to produce for use, that is, for reasonable, necessary wants and comfort, and any profits would go back to replenish worn-out equipment, etc., and to the people, in whatever fair manner they democratically determined. The important difference is that the capitalist system is built on sucking out private profits at whatever cost to the environment, wages, etc., in order to give great wealth to a few. A socialist system starts from the principle that people's needs and development, in harmony with the environment, are always the primary goal, and that profit must always serve that alone.
Well, what do you mean by people's needs and development?
Socialism will strive to provide the conditions and opportunity for each person to reach his or her full potential as a human being in all respects. This is the great fundamental vision and goal and cannot be overemphasized. Full individuality of each. Not individualism, which instead would seek to defeat others to aggrandize the self. Socialist society is based on cooperation and respect for others, not competition in the sense of defeating others. Ample opportunity for people to excel will be available in every field and not be limited to an elite.
But some people say socialism has failed.
Real socialism has never been tried, or a start has been attempted briefly in places like Chile in the early 1970s and overthrown by the capitalists and armed forces, abetted by the United States government. Let's talk about that next time. We can make some comparisons from recent history. Chile, the Soviet Union, Sweden, Cuba, and talk about state capitalism, the welfare state and social democracy, and how they all are not democratic socialism. For a free hard copy of my You Don't Have to Be a Saint to Be a Socialist pamphlet, upon which these audio programs were based, email me at Ed Lang, that's E-D-L-A-I-N-G, all one word, at silcom, S-I-L-C-O-M, .com, or comment to that email, edlang@silcom.com. Until next time. Recording number 4. 3, 2, 1, mark. This is Ed Lang with a basic series on democratic socialism.
What is this S word anyway, and has it failed?
Socialism is not state capitalism, where a bureaucrat signs your paycheck instead of a private owner, but where the necessities of capitalism and its methods and limitations still control. Socialism is not a private ownership capitalist welfare state with all those same problems. The United States was forced by the Great Depression of the 1930s to set up some social security, housing, unemployment protections, and the like. But this never went far enough, and the half-built welfare state has been systematically destroyed in the last decades. More on this in a minute when I talk about social democracy. But has socialism failed? The answer is no. Real socialism, as I have described it in our previous recordings, has never been tried. Or you could say that a start has been attempted in places like Chile, where a socialist, Salvador Allende, was elected president in the early 1970s, fair and square, in a free and democratic election. His democratically elected government was overthrown by the capitalists and the armed forces abetted by the United States government. But here we get into important distinctions and into careful labeling. For example, an accurate description of the former Soviet Union may be bureaucratic centralism, state capitalism, capitalism without capitalists, or something else. But it was never socialist, except perhaps at the start, in the great tradition of left, humanist, radical democratic thinking. A lot has been written about this, but it's a rather pointless sidetrack. The real point is that we can build a society that has the values and forms I have described previously, one that is democratic and not capitalist.
So what is the essential nature of socialism?
The essence of socialism is fully democratic control of the means of production by the people to produce the comfortable essentials of a full life for all, not for profit, but for human use. The historic name for such a society is socialist. Let me repeat, fully democratic control by the people of the means of production and the performance of services to provide the comfortable needs and security of a full, healthy life for everybody. Not just to make profits, but always for genuine needs and use. Not for war, not to get rich, not for manipulated or contrived wants, not by defeating or exploiting others, and not by plundering resources and damaging the environment. You know, capitalists have tried to make socialism a dirty word by attaching it to all manner of other things in capitalist society. Regulation of industry, limits on land use, the welfare state, taxes, or even any attempt to make the government responsive to the needs of ordinary people. These may all be good things, but in a capitalist society, they are reformist only. Capitalism cannot be reformed because the system itself is the problem, as I laid out in the first recording, discussing its undemocratic nature, its inevitable drive to maximize profits and accumulate at everybody else's expense, its need for unemployment, racism, expansion, war, plunder of resources, monopolization, etc.
But the Soviet Union and others used the term socialist.
They sure did. However, you simply can't have socialism without democracy and civil liberties. This is emphasized by the term democratic socialism, but that's really redundant. The kind of society I am advancing has nothing to do with the authoritarian states who hijack the name for demagogic purposes. What I have described earlier as socialism obviously cannot exist without a democratic form, and we can have such a society. It is a fallacy to say that every country's experience will be like a certain other country's just because they used a similar label to describe themselves.
But aren't there socialist countries like Sweden and Cuba?
The accurate term for Sweden is social democracy, a capitalist mixed economy welfare state, where high taxes support social benefits. Most of the productive capacity in Sweden has always been in private ownership. You don't get socialism by simple tax and spend on social benefits, although that certainly has helped provide necessities for people in Sweden and Norway, for example. Norway has been able to provide a social safety net because of large oil resources now being depleted. As discussed last time, the alienation of workers from their productive activity, from the product of that activity, from each other, and from their potential in a shared community, all this remains in a mixed economy, social democracy, such as Sweden, whose welfare, embedded in capitalist values, has been eroding under international economic pressures. You know, U.S. imperialist, capitalist interests were not threatened by Sweden and Norway. But the U.S. government has not allowed social democrats in many other places seen as fair game for plunder, such as the Dominican Republic, Juan Bosch and Camaño y Daño, and Guatemala, Arbenz, etc., etc. Of course, they always called them communists in order to discredit their efforts, but that is simply not true. These same capitalist interests in the U.S. have already destroyed the attempt at a welfare state here, and certainly will not permit going further with a full old-style European social democracy here. These are being destroyed in Europe itself. Look at Germany and France today. In Germany, massive unemployment has reached levels near those before World War II for the first time. So if you want a fair social system, why not make the fight for socialism instead of a losing fight for a stingy, decaying capitalism that is sliding toward a police state and bankruptcy and won't even be able to sustain itself after the peak in energy supply, wars, global warming, and a depleted citizenry?
What about Cuba?
Cuba is an undemocratic or partly democratic anti-capitalist state, perhaps becoming capitalist, with amazing health and education benefits for its repressed people. But as you can see, it cannot be described as socialist under the analysis I have given. For decades, Cuba has been under increasing U.S. attack, especially by Bush the Lesser. But under international law, the U.S. has absolutely no right to interfere with the affairs of other countries, nor they with ours.
Well, we hear the word socialist a lot in the names of political parties around the world.
Too often, political parties around the world that have the word socialist in their names do not have socialist programs, and if in power, merely administer capitalism, as in some countries in Europe. They are trading on the enormous appeal and popular identification made by invoking the liberating, egalitarian tradition that working people understand and want. How many political parties are there with capitalist in their name? And Hitler's National Socialism, the Nazis, of course, had nothing to do with socialism and a whole lot to do with capitalism.
Well, since socialism has all these other connotations, why not use another term?
Fine, how about economic democracy? But even that term is being used in a different way now. The point is that the whole humanist, democratic, anti-capitalist intellectual history uses the term socialism. And that is the one I prefer because it locates us more accurately and historically. But as soon as you call it economic democracy or goodism or anything else, people will say, as they should, "Hey, that's really socialism, isn't it? Are you trying to fool me?" So let's not. Next time, I'll follow up on this and talk briefly about communists, anarchists, radicals, liberals, neoliberals, religion, feminism, and greens. Whee-hoo! For a free copy of my You Don't Have to Be a Saint to Be a Socialist pamphlet upon which these audio programs were based, email me at Ed Lang, that's E-D-L-A-I-N-G, all one word, at silcom, S-I-L-C-O-M, .com. And comment to that email, edlang@silcom.com. Until next time.